Welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Miller. We're here in Dallas. And our guest on today's show is Senate candidate James Tallarico.
Thank you.
Tallarico. You know, we booked this. You're in a primary still, and so we decided to keep it as a surprise for people. So it's a nice, pleasant surprise here in Texas. How you feeling? It's got to feel good to get a little win under your belt. I mean, the real work's ahead, but you got to feel good.
I'm feeling good, and it's so good to be in Dallas, Texas. Thank y'all for the warm welcome. No, it's been great, and I feel like people are finally believing in Texas again, that we can... that we can change the politics of the state, that we can push back against the extremism and the corruption in our government. And I think we're going to surprise a lot of people in November in this state.
You don't think they're doing a good job here so far, the incumbent? You don't think they're doing a good job?
I don't, no. I have just a few complaints.
You have a few critiques? Well, I want to talk about Texas and the Senate race, do a little politics here in a minute and talk about some other stuff. We'll have a little bit of fun at the end. You know, it's a live show. But we got to talk about the news first. And while we were back there, just before we came on, Reuters reporting that Trump is looking at bringing additional troops to the Middle East as part of the Iran war. This obviously seems like it's escalating, though, you know, who the hell knows? He could just turn around and quit tomorrow. We don't know with him. What's your assessment of what we've seen there and just your initial reactions to this war?
Well, you know, as a millennial, I saw how military disasters like the Iraq War robbed this nation of young lives, of billions of dollars, and of our moral standing in the world. And I worry that this president, this administration, is making the same mistake with another forever war in the Middle East. And I was a few weeks ago in Sand Branch, Texas, which is just a few miles from here. That community doesn't have any running water. It doesn't have basic sewer infrastructure. Every dollar we are spending bombing people in the Middle East is a dollar that we are not spending in our communities in this country. And Tim, we're always told that there's not enough money for schools, not enough money for healthcare, not enough money for veterans, but there always seems to be enough money to bomb people on the other side of the world. And so I think it is possible to support the democracy movement in Iran. It is possible to stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon without this kind of reckless military intervention.
Are we even doing either of those things? Are we supporting a democracy movement in Iran?
We may be doing the exact opposite.
Yeah.
I mean, the single best way to empower the regime in Iran is to have this kind of bombing from America. And you're seeing them burning American flags when the regime was on its back foot just weeks ago. And so I worry that we've done the exact opposite and we've empowered the extremists in Iran and we have... weakened the democracy movement in that country.
Yeah, I saw it today because of the closing of the Strait of Hormuz and all the bombing of oil fields in Qatar and elsewhere, the price of a barrel of oil now is up to $110. Do you have mixed feelings about that at all? It is kind of good for Midland.
I mean, the sad thing is that this president was elected to do one thing and one thing only, and that was bring down costs. And now he is doing the exact opposite. Not just the price of gas, but I mean the price of food, the cost of housing, of healthcare. You know, here in Texas, our state leaders didn't expand Medicaid, and so a lot of our fellow Texans depend on the Affordable Care Act, on those subsidies. And so these cuts to the ACA are hurting Texans in particular. And the estimate is 2 million Texans are going to lose their insurance because of these cuts. So this president who was elected to lower costs has actually made things more expensive. And I think it's why you're seeing such a backlash in this state and in this country. Tim, you may know that the folks here in DFW flipped a state Senate seat in Tarrant County.
Oh, yeah.
It was a district that the president had won by 17 points in 2024. And so this community shocked the nation by flipping a state Senate seat. And I think that we're going to shock the world when we flip a U.S. Senate seat.
The other kind of big war-related news is that Trump's counterterrorism chief, Joe Kent, quit the administration. Not a big fan of any Joe Kent fans in the audience. Joe, has quite a hit list as far as his background is concerned. But his resignation was basically pure America First id. You know, it included some conspiracy theories, but it also said, you know, fundamentally when he signed up for this, he wasn't signing up for a war in Iran. He wasn't signing up for a war that was pushed by Israel. As we're talking, he's on with Tucker Carlson right now. It sounds like the FBI is now going to be investigating him. How do you like process that? How do you think about that in Texas? I mean, your kind of big moment, really, maybe not your original big moment, but on the national stage for those of us non-Texans, was when you went on Joe Rogan. You know, and that audience, like, there's some overlap. People who really did believe in maybe the non-racist part of the America First movement, you know, and they didn't want to be in those foreign wars. Yeah. So how do you think about, like, talking about the Joe Kents and communicating with those people and offering something to that that constituency?
I mean, again, we just talked about broken promises when it comes to the cost of living crisis. But there was also a promise made by the president during his campaign that he wasn't going to start any more wars. And now he's started multiple wars just in the first year of his administration. And so I can sympathize with the disillusionment that some of the folks in the MAGA movement are feeling. And I think there's bipartisan opposition to this war in Iran. I hear it from people across the state of Texas, not just Democrats, but independents and Republicans too, who think it's reckless, they think it's counterproductive, and they think it is a wasteful use of our resources when we have so many pressing priorities here at home.
Is there room in the Tallarico Coalition for America First MAGA ties? MTG calls you up and says, hey, I think I might be for you.
I mean,
what do you say?
I've told people that if they want a small, insular group of people who agree with you on everything, you should start a social club. Yeah. But a political party is meant to be a big tent. It is meant to be a group of people who don't agree on everything, but agree on the big stuff. And Tim, I have, you know, in the course of the primary campaign, I went to literally every corner of Texas. I went from Beaumont to El Paso, from Amarillo to Brownsville. And I held so many events with so many Texans who showed up. I can't tell you the number of people who came up to me at the end of those events and whispered, I'm not a Democrat. Yeah. Like they were in the witness protection program.
Yeah.
And you know, I stay to the very end of the events. I shake every hand, I take every selfie, I answer every question. And you know, you hear that 12 times in a photo line and you want to tell people that they're not alone, that they can join this movement we're building because it is big enough for every Texan who is fed up with the extremism and the corruption in our government.
So that's a maybe then on MTG. Yeah. I'll take that as a maybe.
She a Texan?
No, you know, but endorsements. You take endorsements out of state, you never know. I don't know. She's going through some shit.
I mean, and just in all seriousness, we should be extending an open hand rather than a closed fist to those people who are questioning their past support for the president or their past support for the party. Like, I do want to welcome those folks into our coalition. I'm really not interested in purity politics. Like, I am interested in building political power so that we can transform this state and this country and improve people's lives. Like, if you don't win political power, you can't help anybody. Then you're just doom scrolling and complaining on Twitter.
Okay.
Which this that group, feels like this an group attack. Never does.
That feels like
it's called a subtweet. that is the purpose of politics, is to win power and improve people's lives. And that requires persuasion. You know, there's this thing in my party here in Texas where, you know, people will say that Texas is not a red state, it's a non-voting state. And I understand where they're coming from. And Texas does have one of the lowest voter turnout rates in the country. But there's also a point where that argument is used as an excuse not to persuade people who aren't with us yet. And that is so deadly in a democracy, because the whole point of this democratic experiment is that we're supposed to make our argument. We're supposed to make our case, and we're supposed to win hearts and minds. That's how you build a big enough coalition to govern. And I want us to get back to that in the Democratic Party. There was a feeling for a long time that everyone secretly agreed with us. And if they didn't, they were a bigot or a racist or a misogynist, and we didn't need their support. And I hope that the 2024 election was a wake-up call to everyone in our party that we have to start reaching out to people who aren't with us yet and building a bigger coalition.
I love that because I do, yeah. That's, you're speaking my language because there is, I think this weird view that all of the non-voting Texans are just like Democrats, just haven't woken up yet.
They're all like, resistance liberals. Just like waiting.
Actually, I think somebody that doesn't watch the news and doesn't vote and doesn't care about what's happening, they might be for Trump.
Well, so
more, I mean, just saying.
So a couple things.
Maybe we don't want them to vote.
On our campaign, this is something you and I have in common. I did the episode of of Surrounded,
Jubilee
on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I sat down with 25 undecided voters in Texas. And it was a conversation that was wide ranging. And I think something, if you go back and watch that episode on YouTube, you'll realize a truth about politics, which is that undecided voters or non-voters, they tend to have pretty heterodox opinions about things.
Yeah, weird opinions.
And we, and that's a good thing. Like, I honestly think within the parties and among partisan people, like, there's way too much rigid orthodoxies that can never be questioned.
Yes.
I love that people who aren't really into politics, they kind of have a grab bag of some progressive views, some conservative views. You talk about Joe Rogan. You know, Joe Rogan is for a universal basic income. He's for universal health care. And so you could try to put him into a box, but he doesn't fit into a box. And most Texans, most Americans don't either. And I think we should embrace that. And I think it's a mistake that hyper-political people make when they think that all these non-voters or, you know, infrequent voters somehow secretly agree with them on every single plank in the Democratic platform.
I don't know about you, but I loved doing Jubilee.
I did too.
Afterwards,
I had a blast.
I wanted a cigarette, and I said to the guys, I was like, "Can we do this again tomorrow?" It got me, you know, my synapses firing.
I mean, I get bored very easily, and it's why I enjoy serving in the Texas legislature because it's like being in the lion's den all the time, and it's why I like going on Rogan. I like going on Fox News. I like going on the Christian Broadcasting Network. And I love doing Jubilee because it's an opportunity to change hearts and minds. And like, that's so rewarding. No offense to MS Now, but I don't feel like I'm accomplishing as much when I'm in the echo chamber. And sometimes it feels good to be with people who agree with you. And it's sometimes fun to preach to the choir, but I don't feel like I'm doing any good in some of these media spaces like I feel when I'm on Jubilee or on Rogan, actually reaching people who aren't with us yet.
Totally agree. All right, if you've been with me for a minute, you know how much I love Sol's out-of-office beverages. Been hawking them for a while. They're the sparkling THC CBD beverages that are nice for a little night on the couch watching Love Story or, you know, for a weekend hang at the pool. And now Sol is launching something new, some mood gummies. The mood gummies are offering something balanced. Maybe you aren't sure if you need a pick-me-up or a wind-me-down, a little bit of both, something in between. Well, the mood gummies have balanced formulas designed to keep you level. Sol is a wellness brand that makes delicious hemp-derived CBD and THC products designed to make feeling good simple. Sol's new mood gummies have precise dosing, clean ingredients, and formulations designed for predictable effects, so you can choose how you want to feel while staying in control. If you're looking for that bright social energizing buzz, you could do the Uplift gummies. 3 milligrams of sativa, THC plus CBG are perfect for daytime plans or beating the afternoon slump. Or at nighttime, if you're looking to wind down, the Mellow gummies offer a 3 milligram indica, THC plus CBN. Pairing, ideal for cozy nights and fully unplugging. So make today a good day and get yourself some Sol gummies. Right now, Sol is offering my audience 30% off your entire order. Go to getsol.com and use the code THEBULWARK. That's GetSoul.com, promo code TheBulwark for 30% off. The other news item from today I want to talk to you about was Marquain Mullen from up on the other side of the Red River. He had his confirmation hearing today. It was kind of, there were some fireworks. It was kind of interesting because he had previously basically said that Rand Paul's neighbor like had a few things right when he kicked Rand Paul's ass. And Rand is the chair of the committee that he needs to be confirmed through. So, yeah, awkward. So there was like a lot of back and forth. And then he refused to apologize. Yeah, he wouldn't even just say, sorry, man, things got a little heated. He wouldn't do it. So, you know, that confirmation is, I think, really hinging, unfortunately, on John Fetterman. So we'll see what happens with that. I guess the obvious question is, you would be a no on Marquain Mullen.
I would. And here's why. I mean, I would be a no on any potential secretary who is not willing to tear down this secret police force and replace it with an agency that's actually focused on public safety. Tim, before I was a politician, I was a public school teacher in San Antonio, Texas, on the west side of the city. And I taught a lot of undocumented students. And those students tended to be my most patriotic students.
Yeah.
They understood something about this country that a lot of us who are native born forget, that this is supposed to be the land of opportunity, that this is supposed to be the place where dreams come true. And they believed that in their bones. And they believed in this country even when this country didn't believe in them. And so the fact that we have the most powerful politicians in the country terrorizing my former students and their families, people who work hard every day to contribute to this economy and to this country, to me is immoral, it's unconscionable, it's unacceptable, and it has to end. We should be cracking down on the cartels, not our communities. We should be deporting gang members, not small business owners.
Yeah.
We should be hunting down human traffickers, not moms and babies. This is something that I think most Texans agree with. And this is something I said on Jubilee. It was the failures of my party. It was the failures of the Biden administration that opened the door to this extremism, that opened the door to masked men in unmarked vehicles kidnapping people off our street. So both parties have failed us on this issue over the last 30 years. I think Texans and Americans are just looking, they're looking for leaders who are going to hold two things in their mind at once, being pro-immigrant and pro-security. Because like we've been told those are mutually exclusive and they're not.
Yeah. I saw on the internet, which isn't real life, that you got a little shit over that, what you were saying on Surrounded about how it was, you know, the mistakes of your party that led us here. And a lot of people would say is, well, what about the James Lankford bill that Donald Trump blocked and that the Republicans in the Senate blocked? And like, there's something to that, right? Like Donald Trump wanted there to be chaos because he wanted to help his election.
Absolutely.
But that was in the fourth year of the Biden presidency, right? Like there were 3 years before that. So talk about those 3 years, and like what you think they should have or could have done differently.
Well, and the proof is that they were able to get the border under control 4 months, 5 months before the election.
Right.
And so they knew how to do it. And I've heard from people who served in the Biden administration who said that the administration, the president himself, they were listening to these groups for people who aren't super into the infrastructure of the Democratic Party. In recent years, there have been a series of advocacy groups that claim to represent the interests of different communities, like here in Texas, but actually have no real connection to the actual people on the ground. And those groups convinced the administration that it was racist to support border security. And nothing could be further from the truth. It was my colleagues in the State House who served border communities in South Texas, in El Paso, who were constantly telling me about the chaos in their communities because of the Biden administration's policies. And that is not compassionate. Chaos is not compassionate. And we as Democrats, we're the party that's supposed to make the government work for people. And this was a prime example of government not working for people. And again, you know, I the Republicans have been attacking me by taking something that I say about the border and basically cutting it off mid-sentence. I have said throughout the whole campaign that our southern border should be like our front porch. There should be a giant welcome mat out front and a lock on the door, meaning you can welcome hardworking immigrants who want to contribute to this country and keep out people who mean to do us harm. Not mutually exclusive goals. But the Republicans don't want you to know that those two things are possible. And so they post this clip and they cut it right before I say lock on the door. So it just sounds like I want open borders. But I think this is where most Texans and most Americans are at on the issue. And it's why they're frustrated with both parties. Because in the Democratic Party, they see a party that's pro-immigrant, but doesn't seem too concerned about security. Then they throw us out. They elect the Republicans, a party that's very concerned about security and seems to be pretty anti-immigrant.
Yeah.
And they're dissatisfied with that too. So they want a party, they want leaders who are going to hold both those values together at the same time.
Yeah, you did pretty well in the Rio Grande Valley and with Latino voters during the primary. I've had Bobby Pulido on the show who's running down there, who's a good guy, running for a Republican seat there. So thinking about the general election, like this was a huge shift, you know, over to Republicans. And I think that was caught a lot of Democrats by surprise, right? Because they convinced themselves that there was a demographics is destiny argument, that how could any Latino vote for Trump? Because he's obviously racist, which he is. And so it's like, we don't need to try. And when I talk to Bobby, or when I talk to some other people, you know, in that community, what you hear a lot of is like two issues. One was border security, which you were just talking about. And the other is faith. You know, like a lot of folks in those communities are Catholic or Protestant, Hispanics that feel like the Democratic Party, you know, is godless or whatever as a short term. What is your plan for kind of re-engaging those voters that were lost?
Yeah. And, you know, my family is from South Texas. Yep. My mom grew up in Laredo on our southern border.
Telerico.
And, yeah.
It's well, like Hispanic.
So
it's a vowel at the end. We're going to count it.
That's true. It was just me and my mom when I was born, and she was she very heroically left an abusive situation to protect me and ensure I had a better life. But the luckiest thing that ever happened to either of us was meeting Mark Tallarico, who then adopted me, gave me his last name, and raised me as his own. Oh. And he, shout out to Mark Tallarico. Anyway, he is a first-generation American. His family came to this country from Italy, so it's an Italian last name. But down there, you know, I say Tallarico, they say Tallarico, which is much prettier than the way I say it.
Roll that R.
Yeah, but you know, South Texas is one of my favorite places in the world. The Rio Grande Valley is one of my favorite places in the world. I went down there a lot because the reason Democrats lost support in South Texas and among Hispanic voters across the state is because we took them for granted. We assumed they were a part of our base, and we stopped showing up. We stopped competing for their votes. I was told by my state representative that I grew up with when he was teaching me about campaigning, he said, you always have to ask for people's votes. And that sounds obvious, but it's actually something people don't do in our politics anymore. You have to ask for someone's vote. You have to earn their vote. You have to actively compete for it. And so that's what I did in this primary campaign. I went down to South Texas more times than I can count. I went down to the Valley a ton, and I listened. I heard their concerns, both about immigration, but honestly, primarily about costs. It's this cost of living crisis that's crushing people all over the state, but especially folks in South Texas. And then we developed a policy platform in partnership with them that could meet those needs. And I think showing up and listening is half the battle in politics. And it's where our party should do a better job of among all communities, not just Hispanic voters.
I've been listening to you know, a lot of your speeches and your pitch over the past couple of weeks, both during the primary and kind of since. And you talk a lot in this question of, okay, look, Trump got about 1.5 million more votes than Kamala, right? So what we were talking about earlier, there's got to be persuasion. And there's a turnout element to it. There's a persuasion element. And you really focus in the persuasion element on this top-down politics, like getting out of the culture war, getting out of the left-right, focusing on the top-down. And I believe there's something to it. I also worry, though, that like the cultural rift between the Democratic Party and parts of America and parts of Texas is very real. Yeah. And just like pretending like that isn't a kitchen table issue, you know, pretending like they're not going to talk about whatever it is, yeah, COVID or trans or whatever, yeah, anything. Like, I think that that's a losing bet, right? And that there has to be some engagement on a cultural level to get people to listen to you. How do you kind of react to that?
Well, one, you were just talking about faith and its centrality in the lives of so many Texans, and that people feel like the Democratic Party is hostile to those cultural values, and they're not necessarily wrong about that. Someone pointed out to me that every world religion is mentioned in our party platform except for Christianity. And it seems like a pretty glaring omission.
The DNC has a page for like literally every group you could imagine, Hawaiian nationals.
Shout out to our Baha'i.
Not boys or white people.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay. Well,
that's the point is like, I get I get the instinct.
Sure.
And that is to look out for people who are bullied, people who are on the outside. And I like that instinct in the Democratic Party. It just becomes a problem when that turns into pushing away people who are in the dominant group, who could very much be in our coalition. There are, I think, so many people of faith, so many Christians in this state who sympathize with the Democratic Party on a whole host of issues, immigration maybe being at the top of the list. And they are just, they're waiting for a candidate, a campaign that's not hostile to those values and who's willing to connect with them on these conversations of faith and spirituality. And I think it's what's so powerful about the movement that we're currently building in Texas is that we are building bridges about things, you know, that are honestly deeper than public policy.
Are you going to be able to go into the mega church, though?
Absolutely.
We all know the woke church. Yeah, every town's got the church with the pride flag. We love them. We appreciate to be welcomed.
Well, and
are you going to go to see Joel Osteen, too?
I would love to. I would love to visit his church. I mentioned that I go on the Christian Broadcasting Network because, you know, I want to extend an open hand to to my brothers and sisters in Christ who are a little more conservative than I am. And I think that kind of outreach will allow us to build a coalition big enough to win in a place like Texas. And it's been a long time since we've had leaders in our party who speak openly and unapologetically about their faith. And that's necessary because people have to communicate their why. And for me, it's my faith, but it may be different for you. But Democrats always speak to people's brains instead of their hearts and their guts. And every single human being in this room across the state, we make decisions with our heart and our gut, and then our brain justifies it. That's how every person works, but as logical as we all pretend that we are. And so if we as political leaders, we as organizers are not speaking to people's hearts first, then we're committing political malpractice. And it's something that our campaign tries to do every day is focus on values before we get into policy minutia, because those values are unifying and are transcendent. And I think it has to be at the forefront of our political discourse in this country.
All right, y'all, I have a bad habit. You probably have it too. We know we should stop doing it. It's scrolling on our phones while we're laying in bed. And here's what's actually happening when you're doing that. The stress, the screen time, the just one more headline spiral, it all raises your core body temperature. And a body that's too warm can't get into deep sleep. You're not just tired because the news is exhausting. You're tired because your body never actually recovered. The good news, and yes, there's always some, science has a real answer. And it's simpler than you think. Your bed temperature. Enter Chili Pad 2.0, great name, the water-based mattress topper that actively controls your bed temperature from 55 to 115 degrees all night long. No new mattress, no renovation. It fits over what you already have. Chili Pad 2.0 actively cools or warms your bed using water. Water is the key here. Fans just move hot air around. Chili Pad uses actively chilled water to cool the bed, actually pulling heat away from your body. It's like the difference between standing in front of a fan and jumping into a cold pool. It's one of the most efficient natural ways to control temperature.
which means you get precise, consistent comfort all night long, 55 to 115 degrees Fahrenheit. And it works with your existing mattress, so no new bed needed. But this isn't just an upgrade, it's a complete rethink. The new 2.0 comes with a redesigned dock, quieter than ever, with a larger internal tank. The topper itself is now a premium performance-grade cover that unzips for easy washing and has built-in waterproof protection. The biggest change, the nightstand remote. Each side of the bed gets its own dedicated thermostat. Important in my house. And here's the part I love. It is a sensor that detects when you get into bed and automatically triggers your sleep schedule. Zero friction. You get in, it kicks on. That's intelligent, cool sleep, literally. As I mentioned, we need the remote for the different sides of the bed because we're sleeping at different temperatures in our bed, you know? Don't want to get TMI, but there's some sweatiness happening on the other side of the bed. And the chili pad, it's been a relief, I do have to say. It's cooling us down and even allows for a little bit of cuddle time because, you know, I'm not drenched in my husband's sweat. Visit www.sleep.me/bulwark to get your chili pad 2.0 for up to $255 off with code Bulwark. This special offer is available for listeners of the Bulwark podcast, but only for a limited time. Plus, it ships free, and you can try it risk-free for 30 days with flexible payment and financing options. And if you don't like it, return it at no cost. That's sleep.me/bulwark, because when you optimize your sleep, you optimize your performance.
All right, let's have some fun.
Okay. I'm having fun.
You know, it's the Bulwark podcast.
It's true.
Okay, we're
it's
not going to really have fun until we start dunking on the other guys. What who are you rooting for in that other primary? They're still working things out over there.
They are.
Got a rooting interest.
You know, I said on election night that it doesn't matter who comes out of this Republican runoff because we already know who we're running against. We're running against the billionaire mega donors and their corrupt political system. And I think John Cornyn and Ken Paxton embody the corruption in our politics. Obviously, Ken Paxton's crimes are well known. And you know, I was part of the bipartisan majority in the Texas House of Representatives that voted to impeach our corrupt attorney general. But don't laugh when I say this. I think John Cornyn may be even more corrupt than Ken Paxton. And here's why. Yeah, see?
I'm ready for the pitch.
John Cornyn, by the way, he was first elected to public office 6 years before I was born.
1912.
He got to the Senate when I was in middle school, actually. Hmm. And John Cornyn, just last year, was the deciding vote on that big, ugly bill. That big, ugly bill that's going to kick millions of Texans off their health care. That big, ugly bill that's going to take food out of the mouths of hungry Texas kids, all to give yet another tax break to his billionaire donors. And so Ken Paxton was impeached for using his public office to enrich his donors. And that's exactly what John Cornyn does at the biggest scale. And so we oftentimes think of corruption as something that's illegal, but corruption is really just the betrayal of the public's trust. And by casting that deciding vote on that big ugly bill, John Cornyn committed an act of corruption of the highest order.
Even the brown paper bag corruption, it's like John Cornyn pretending like he cares about Ken Paxton's corruption. Give me a fucking break. He's in the Senate. What about Jared's money from MBS? What about the crypto money that Don Jr. and Eric are making? Where's John Cornyn on any of that?
Well, and like, I think Ken Paxton actually believes in his extremism.
Yeah.
I'll give him that. I think he's a true believer.
Yeah.
John Cornyn, though, is the worst kind of politician. He will believe whatever he has to hold on to power.
Yeah.
And I think that's like what people across the political spectrum are really fed up with. So I just believe that neither John Cornyn nor Ken Paxton deserve the honor of representing this great state in the United States Senate.
Ken Paxton just loves his side pieces. You know, he loves them earnestly. There's something honest about that. John Cornyn, back to him. You remember that ad where he said he was Big John Cornyn? I'm wondering if there is anybody in public life more emasculated than Big John Cornyn sitting in Daddy Trump's cuck chair. Like, he's getting rid of the filibuster. He's flying on Daddy Trump's plane. Whatever you want, sir. Whatever you want, Mr. Trump. Doesn't give Big John Cornyn to me.
And that's, honestly, it's a, you know, one of the great things about this state is that we value independence.
Yeah.
We like people who think for themselves. And I think what people are looking for in the next U.S. senator from this state is someone who will think for themselves, someone who will push back against the powerful people in either party, and someone who's going to do right by Texans. I think that's what we don't have currently, and it's something people are hungry for from their next U.S. senator.
Sarah asked me backstage if I thought Big John Cornyn was non-binary, and I was like, that's a sensitive topic. Up there. So my Mark Levin situation. Okay. Do we have any... one more thing before we get to the rapid fire round. Does John Cornyn's, you know, kind of Saul the Damascus love for getting rid of the filibuster, do you see any encouragement out of that? Where would you end up being on the filibuster?
Well, I agree with John Cornyn because I think we should abolish the filibuster so that we can actually govern in this country. I mean, people of Texas, they vote for leaders from a certain party and they want to see the results of that vote, whether it's the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. What's happening now because of the filibuster is they elect one party, they see nothing getting done, they don't see any improvement in their lives, and so they swing wildly to the other party, and then they see more gridlock. And so I think what needs to happen is we have to improve this feedback loop between the voters and the people that represent them. And people deserve to see the results of their vote. Yeah. And then they can make judgments about whether they want to continue slashing healthcare and slashing food assistance for hungry kids or starting more forever wars. And then they can make a judgment and adjust accordingly. Right now, they're not able to see the results of their vote because of the filibuster. So I'm all for a talking filibuster, but this situation where a certain number of senators can just veto any action, to me, is just a recipe for more gridlock.
Are there any senators up there you think are doing good? Are there anybody you want to model yourself after?
Absolutely. I mean, this probably doesn't come as a surprise, but I'm deeply inspired by Reverend Raphael Warnock.
He's great.
Because not only the way that he, you know, balances his role as a faith leader and his role as a public servant in a healthy and responsible way, but also because he knows how to flip a red state. And we, I think, in Texas, take a lot of inspiration from what they've done in Georgia, and we're going to follow the same playbook so that we can end 30 years of one-party rule in our state.
That reminds me, I had one other question before we got to rapid fire. Reverend Warnock was invoked in your heated primary where, you know, there were some issues across racial lines. I think there's been some concern that, like, one of the things that could hold you back in the general is whether black voters are going to be excited enough to turn out for you. And I'm just kind of wondering how you're thinking about that and how you're communicating with that constituency.
Well, I'm thinking about it a lot. It is my top priority right now and for the next few weeks and months is healing the divisions from this primary. And I talked earlier about taking people for granted, taking communities for granted. And that also applies to black voters in this state. And so I'm going to be doing the work to earn the trust and the respect and the support of every black Texan. And that means showing up in the community. In fact, you know, I'm here in Dallas tomorrow morning. I'm participating in a round table of black faith leaders here in DFW. And that's just one example of the kind of work we're going to be doing in the weeks and months ahead so that we can bring our coalition back together and do something really special together, and that's finally win statewide in Texas.
All right, here we go. Rapid fire. We have a meat section and a Texas section. In the meat section, first, how big is God's sausage, would you say? We know God is a man, and so I'm just wondering, like, how healthy his hog is.
So I know this is rapid fire, but let me just, because.
Two-word answer. No.
Yes or no. Listen, I know that I was being provocative with that comment. I made it on the floor of the House when the extremists in the Texas legislature were trying to pick on kids who were different. And while it's maybe provocative politically, I don't think it's controversial theologically. Most Christians believe that God is beyond gender. And in fact, the Apostle Paul, in his letter to the Galatians, says that in Christ, there is neither male nor female. So if you have a problem with what I said, don't take it up with me, take it up with the Apostle Paul.
Second Apostle Paul reference of this podcast. That's a first. That's a first. I guess Saul to Damascus is kind of close. Okay. Yeah. Otherwise, in the meat, there's a video going around of you talking about, I guess, one of your state rep campaigns was a vegan campaign, or which I don't know. I'm looking side eye at as a former Republican. Where are you at on Texas meats? What are your favorites? Are you a vegan?
Thank you for asking this very important question. Yeah. Because this is a very serious allegation to make in Texas. So I want to say this definitively and categorically, that I deny all accusations of veganism.
Okay,
and,
great.
and our campaign basically runs on barbecue these days. You asked my favorite. I will give a shout out to, I think, the best barbecue joint in Texas, which was in my old legislative district in Taylor, Texas, Louis Miller Barbecue.
All right.
Check it out. Next time you're in Taylor, best brisket you're going to find. So. Okay. That's my plug.
I'm a hipster, so I'm going to La Barbecue in Austin tomorrow. But sorry, guys. It's not up there. I'll give you the authentic shit when you're asking me about crawfish etouffee, okay? I'm going to the hipster tourist joints in Texas. All right, we closed the podcast with a song. We're here in Texas. Obviously, Bob Wills is the king down here. I'm wondering if you could give us maybe, what's a hill in the hill country? If you did a Mount Rushmore, where would the hill be in Texas? Do we have a hill?
A hill?
Do we have a hill anywhere?
Yeah.
Hill country?
Yeah, we could do the Chisos Mountains in Big Bend.
In Big Bend, if we're going to make a Texas musician, Mount Rushmore, who do you think we'd put up there?
Oh, my God.
Who do you got?
So one, I'm going to start with the king of country music, George Strait. Then I'm going to add I'm going to add Selena Quintanilla, the queen of Tejano music. Then I'm going to add the patron saint of Austin, Texas, Willie Nelson. Mm. And then I'm going to close it out with one more one-word musician, and that's Beyonce.
Beyonce.
That's right.
All right. Ain't no hold 'em. That's James Tallarico. He's running for Senate. What
thank
do you
y'all.
Think?
Appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you.
I wouldn't be a Willie fan. Nobody swam the Rio Grande. I wouldn't be an American if it wasn't for Texas.
The Borg Podcast is brought to you thanks to the work of lead producer Katie Cooper, associate producer Ansley Skipper, and with video editing by Katie Lutz and audio engineering and editing by Jason Brown.